you not be commercial.
Good morning. Some may be with us already, some may be arriving. But I want to start off with the agenda first, opening, welcome, apologies. We have two apologies from the DA, although one is a late apology indicating Mr. Jordan, Honourable Jordan Hill Lewis, will be returning at about 10:30, 11 at the latest. And then we have an apology here from the advocate Albert, who's still attending to party business this week. And I have asked members to submit written apologies. We don't always get them. And the thing is, with these apologies, with party work and so on, it's important that we get them, you see. We do have a written apology here from Albert, who regrettably has is attending to matters related to the passing away of a very close relative within the family, and he is addressing those family matters. And certainly we pass our condolences to him, and I'm sure the committee, on behalf of the committee, we can do the same. But he has forwarded an apology related to the family bereavement. And we have both Cope here. I have tried to ascertain where the Honourable Quabas is here, who is usually here on time, and so I only think the bus is late. And otherwise, I know we have Honourable Mabasa, and if you can tell Honourable Mabasa, we're about to start now. Thank you, Comrade Leader. As he being told, thank you. Well, we'll start. I'll just welcome as well the members of DTI who are here with us today. We have the Chief Director, of course, again. And I'm just looking here. I don't always remember. I know that it's Mr. Ndumo, but I was just looking for, is it Mr. Rafu? Is it Mr. Rafu? Thank you. The Register of Co-ops. I don't see Mr. Ipo Zakorda at the moment, but he did indicate he was coming. Is that correct? Is that... All right. And, of course, the Parliamentary Liaison Officer from ETI. And then we're going to be, after the adoption of the agenda, we're going to be dealing with the National Apex Cooperative. Are they here? Yes, good. Right, can we have somebody here to adopt the agenda, please, from the committee? Thank you very much, Honourable Vandermeuler. There are five of us here, but I don't know if someone's delayed on tea. Who's seconding this? Yes. Thank you, Honourable McIntosh. Right. And if we can immediately move then to the South African National Apex Cooperative, I think some of you did touch sides with the Honourable Mabasa in Kimberley, it seems. Was that the national or international conference? Honourable Ndumo?
Sir President, it was the International Day of Cooperative, the celebration.
There is one thing I want to say in that regard. The committee only became aware of that 2 days before. Now, it makes it virtually impossible, given the PMMA type of management, because, of course, Parliament has something slightly different, which it also relates to the financial management processes, good governance, for us to, as it were, pick up the phone and say, approve this. It requires a process of signatures, getting hold of chair, getting hold of people physically for a signature, and that's why, in fact, Parliament did not financially support this step, because it was too short a process. But I'm sure such international conferences are known to the Department, in particular the Division, well before the time that they occur, but not once was it mentioned. So I think in future it was only through the passionate endeavours of the Honourable Mabasa that the committee was in any way there. And he did this off his own back. And when I say that, as an individual member of Parliament and the chair of the subcommittee, thank you very much, Honourable Mabasa. So if you'd please keep us in touch with this sort of thing. Can we then move to the APEX then, the South African National APEX? We've got Mr. L. Bale, President Sanaco. Is it Bali? And Ms. Plinko. Now I've only got one here, Sanaco. How's the name spelled? Well, unfortunately, they haven't actually put the rest of us. I apologize. They do the same on my name, you know, beginning the last half. Thank you very much. Can we start off with whoever is leading the team? Mr. Bali? Or yourself?
Chairperson of the Political Committee, Trade Ministry, other members of the Committee of the Trade Ministry in Parliament, the Department officials representatives here in Parliament, Mr. Ngumo, Mr. Register Rapo, Madam Enzabut Kukimot, if there are others, I must not be aware of who is pardoning me. Nakosa, Wellington, Mary Matakala, the women fracture, other members who are here, you forgive me for those questions by names. I might not be aware, but I believe we're all here to make a cause and contribute to the law that is going to apply on the development of cooperatives. But I can see here on the agenda there's the Association of Chartered Certified Accountants, as well as the National Consumer Tribunal, and others. allow me, Chairperson, to say, of course, I am privileged representing more than 54,000 registered cooperatives in South Africa. As the president of cooperatives in this country, and of course, for information chair and SADC, I'm also leading the South African Development Cooperative Federation. In the SADC, this information must also go to the parliament that the Minister of Trade Industry came and graced the occasion. And we are grateful the support that we are getting from the Department of Trade Industry, in particular, himself, the Minister, Deputy Minister, Director General. We need to mention that on record. I didn't miss to say with me here, I'm not alone. I'm with the Deputy President of Cooperatives in South Africa. That's in the Dura Court. I'm with the Secretary General of Cooperatives in South Africa, in the Dima Wuza. I'm with the Treasurer General, Mr. Miguel Magasha, with other officials, Ms. Sylvia Tree, as well as Lindy Wentolo. Of course, as cooperatives represented here in Parliament today by Sanaco, we are saying we've made some change in the international community. For the first time ever since 1995, South Africa hosted the Global Board meeting. And indeed, for your information, that you need to be aware is that next year, as SANACO will be hosting the General Assembly, the whole world will be coming here because SANACO is a member of the International Cooperative Alliance. And we think we've done our best. But allow me now to start with a mirror. I'll give you a brief background that in 2008, on the 30th of June, the Department of Tourism Industry, which was led at that particular time by the then minister and then the chief director, Mr. Ndungu, who played a key role that we must applaud even here in Parliament, the role they played that we need one ahead in this country. He organized all cooperatives in the country to come together and speak one voice, so that where people are must be united. They must not be divided and come in different paths. And we need to applaud that he did his best. It was informed by overflow of individuals, of operators coming in one by one to look for support and service. And of course complain and couldn't handle the different ones from all the other countries, from Cape to Messina, from Northern Cape to Eastern Cape, from Northwest to KZN. So he said all people must be organized. In that light note, the Department of Industry organized opportunity to say we need a steering committee that from bottom up approach must be organized from bottom up. It must not be an abstraction. They must start from the ground. And to put you on record that as an ACO, we are in all municipalities, we are in all regions and districts, in all provinces, as well as national and international. I must say that before I come to make my input on the issues of the ISLB, it was not only that resolution. And we say, well, Mr. Gunn, he also emphasized the issue of 30% procurement for cooperatives buyers to improve them and so that they can liberate from the marginal survival of small cooperatives, but big factories and industries, and of course, growth from agro processing. And indeed, some of them, they are moving to that. But we need this to be legislated in Parliament so that our cooperatives can grow. I think you've seen in other countries that cooperatives grow through the support of the state, all supported by the private sectors. The launch has happened, which is a geographical representation, of course, as economic sectors aligned with the present act that we're here to make some amendments. I must say, Madam Chair, that SANACO represents you as well in the NEDLEC. We also see it as NEDLEC. And as executive of NEDLEC, in the medical management of NEDLEC, as well as your president of cooperatives is also the development chamber in NEDLEC, which is also chiefly the overall convener in NEDLEC. I must say for information officially that I already indicated that we're members of the ICA, International Cooperative Alliance. We are also sitting in the ICA Africa. We are also leading, so South Africa is leading the SADC. So the president, or the office of the president is in South Africa. So that you must know. Now allow me to raise issues strongly on Amendment B. We agreed that, of course, we look into the history, how we agreed that at least five natural persons need to form a cooperative. We'll develop this as we grow and be like other countries. But for now, we are agreeing that at least five persons can form a cooperative. And indeed, we are saying that this must be in terms of the community because we don't want to make sure that our cooperatives are dependent, but also must have some commitment. When government comes in, support our own initiatives. So those are able to be manageable as a small group. I think we adhere to that. I must say now on the issue of the category of primary cooperatives that we agree on the insertion of the prescription of the monetary threshold. But this must indicate that not to be determined by the minister. I think all of you will agree with me that if we give powers to the politicians, it will jeopardize the business ideology that we have because of a number of issues. That those who are doing business practically on a daily basis will agree with us. And we are saying the company must play a leading role since they are the ones who are involved on a daily basis of running the enterprise to better their own life, and the majority of that will come to the national apex cooperatives. We are saying the 2008 cooperatives conference hence, I'm emphasizing that I'm not speaking only as members of ANACO. We are speaking on behalf of all cooperatives in the country through the process that has been done by the government, and we have already applauded the chief in this regard. And this, what we're raising here, saying here, is the resolution of the National Conference organized by the department. And in this regard, we are supporting our department. There was a layer of national aspect. Let me start with secondary. That secondary is about two primaries, but where it defeats the idea that at least if it can be fast, it can make an impact through the process of marketing and of course issues of involving a number of people. But that is on the economic sector. I want to address the issue of the secondary, because these are intertwined. Because intertwined in the sense of secondaries, some of them there are other ways, advocacy or lobbying or otherwise they are used. But we are making a point here, Honorable Chairperson, that those who are lobbying and advocacy, at least they must be formed by at least more than 5 provinces and at least more than 5 secondaries, so that they can have a proper geographical representation. I don't claim to represent one for long. So it must have some proper geographical representation and as well as economic sector. Because when we think this is, I'll give an example about the beggar societies in the regard suburbs. That when it's formed, then we say there must be 5 provinces that are supportive of that, and at least there must be a number of them that are economic that are in existence so that they can be legitimate. I think I've made my point in that regard. I'll move now to the regional aspects, which on this issue, Madam Chairperson and honorable members, and then of course with other colleagues in Parliament, need to emphasize the importance of the national aspects. That the national assets in the country is the one that speaks on behalf of cooperatives. And these assets, to the resolutions of the cooperatives, must be, a number of people must come in. Primaries, secondaries, even other people that will interact and contribute on the development of cooperatives can join directly to the assets, because that assets represent all people. And we've emphasized that you must not at all use preferences, and you must not use this to fight other people to come with you, because they make you to see things that you don't see. Let's work together in this, and then we are seeing the other is one. When all of government to the strategy, I think the chief director has already passed this in Parliament. I mean, we are working very well, we must say, that we have agreed in that, that the national, the strategy says the other is one in the country, and it passed. And the call that was taken from the resolutions of all cooperatives in the country, in the conference, then agreed, and the government flew in past. And we're in support of that, of the assets in the country. And how do we do that? I must tell the issue of exiting these assets that we have now. I must indicate that we do have the assets that represents all people in the country. Also, it's a member. It's a leader of the standard. Also, it's a member of the ICA Africa. Also, it's a member of the ICA globally. Hence, Indians, colored, white, black. Everyone is there. And all provinces, all youth, all municipalities. And we are moving it forward to say, this is of the country must go down to the world because people are on the ground where people are. It must be formed by the world where people are directly. Because we are saying through cooperatives, we can elevate property, we can create employment, we can better our own life, we can be responsible on what we do. So we think to take it down. So we do have that. So that must be legislated. And then the on record. Of course, why we need to retaliate to this point? That the role of APEC is to speak on behalf of its members. But in the country now where we are, not only its members, but to speak on behalf of all members. That's what we now indicated. But speak on behalf of NEDLEC, but speak on that we are representing the leader now in the SADC. We are speaking on the behalf in the international arena. We have brought the whole globe here. That shows that we are doing our role. And in that regard, we are saying, through this parliament, they were making presentation, that we reiterate a distinction between the tertiary, and which was used interchangeably, between the tertiary and a national asset. We are proposing, or in support, of the fourth time, so that it can be legislated as one aspect in the country, which is the national asset in terms of the law that we are putting here today, so that it can have a distinction, because in terms of the past law, which we don't want to go down to the register, and we have a discussion with the registrar and the chief director here, that we have got already more than 30, I think there were 50 more tertiary. How do we register them? We can know. Hence we are creating the fourth time. Also to face in the international arena that we have a this federation that is on their behalf. That is the national aspect. As we say, it's an aspect, but do the logic. This is the tertiary, the secondary, as well as the primary. Those will be the economic activities. And all of them can affiliate and make strong the voice of cooperatives as the national aspects. I think we're doing well on that regard. Allow me to speak on the issue of the advanced cancer macabre. We recommend that 86% must come from cooperatives. You'll agree with me, madam, that we don't want to take because these are knowledgeable in terms of the progress on all the paper. We need to go a practical and do this work on a daily basis. When they advise the person concerned to put a signature, it must be informed on the work done on a daily basis. They must know they're in that. They must know what they're doing. So actually the advisor council must be formed by more than 50%. That must come from cooperatives. But of course, we must say they must also be inducted. They must also be brought on books, but not leave more on their business. We also move to the issues of the establishment of the cooperative development agency. I think everyone will see the need of this. I think on this one, we must get a number of support. And when first is that, we've already discussed it. This is a matter I must indicate that let me choose on this coming letter. And we've decided and that at least must be more than 60%. We are also emphasizing the balance that 60% of them come from the cooperative. That's the board of the development cooperative agency. And we are saying we're already motivated in that regard. Why meet more than 60%? And then we think, because remember, Manchester, in their own life, how can they develop their own life? But if it's somebody from school who knows about cooperative on the paper, can discuss what people are doing. So in line with the principles and recommendation 193 of the ILO, we are saying that the majority of the board of the 60% must come from the cooperative, because on this regard, they know they are in that. I must talk about the issue of the tribunal, Madam Chair. I don't want to politicize this. I'm not a politician. I don't intend to be a politician in my life. I want to be a civilian. But I've seen this within the country before then. They used to establish the court, the police stations in the rural areas. Not build schools, not build school facilities, but introducing the court for what? Why do you go to the court and the police station? So let me quickly finish my documents, then I will do quickly that, because we are saying tribunal, the money for tribunal for now must be directed to the education of the cooperatives. So we are in this regard not agreeing on the tribunal. We are not agreeing on the tribunal because we need, if cooperatives are educated and then know the industry, they will fight. Because we are not doing enough to educate our cooperatives. Because they are going to register that knowledge and they fight when something comes. The money must, the value of the money must go there. Chair, due to time, we want also to quickly, don't want to be this opportunity to say, the issue of the Minimac. We are saying that, that chapter 12, they're saying, chapter 9, section 9D, 1G. The Minimac section must be utilized for monitoring because they are not easily accessible and do not meet on a regular basis. They should therefore not be affected in terms of playing the monitoring role. We recommend that organized corporate structures on the ground must monitor and supported by government. And we are saying the MIMEC, when it the corporate movement must be sitting in that regard. When they discuss the issue of the corporate, not only issues that affect our issues, but from the day that we discuss the issue of cooperative, they must be sitting on that one. Because they will be speaking about them. You can't go and speak about us when they're not there. To be misled, we will not talk about speech and talk. In this regard, we need to make sure that cooperatives are present in that regard. Let me read so that I could quickly finish my document. We recommend that the Act must provide for cooperatives to play a leading role. This input in terms of the cooperatives playing a leading role must be covered in all input where government intervention is involved. We've placed other issues so that I can see that in whatever that you speak, don't leave cooperatives because they must be part of that. You can't go and think about issues that are not there. I'm concluding, Madam Chair. We hope will be called to come and make this, and this is what I think it will be taken on that. In conclusion, Madam, we are also calling for a corporate charter that will support. We do have a corporate charter, except these documents that mean the cooperatives will grow in this country. Like the VE is there, the money is there, why can't we have our own? We need a corporate charter. I know of no case where the community has been housed by us except itself, Madam Chair. I think this proverb I get from my great-grandfather, who said, who will house you except yourself? These goals will say, when you go and talk about cooperatives, they must be part of that. I thank you, Honourable Chair.
Thank you very, very much, Mr. Ali. Thank you. And also for the written input that you've sent as well. What I thought members may be useful as it is a related group of voters, the SA National Co-ops and later the Women, and then the National APEX Federation of South Africa, which also is directly related to the co-ops, that we can in fact take all three, you know, presentations and then tackle some of the questions, or would you prefer to immediately now get some clarification? Honourable McIntosh?
Thank you, Madam Chair. I would prefer just to deal with it because it's quite a serious actually contribution, and I think there's some very interesting comments. I see also that Mr. Lawrence Bale knocked all our stereotypes. I was expecting the Mlungu to arrive and thought, well, this is a nice South African co-op organization. I know it's Mr. Bale, and you're a great preacher for co-ops. And also, by the way, your offices are in one of the most beautiful buildings in Pretoria, the town hall. I just really have one specific question, and that is your complaint about tribunals, Mr. Bali. You know, we don't live in heaven. There's going to be conflict. You know, we get married and it's going to be wonderful, and then their problems, and it's a divorce, and we again in Zulu say, is or no said, this is Sonderfall in Afrikaans, and we need to have the safety nets. Obviously, we all hope we can resolve conflict without having to have tribunals and courts and so on, but my question is, are you not perhaps being too idealistic to think that we can have and not have some mechanism unless you suggest some other mechanism? In other words, we just go to courts. we don't have another domestic tribunal for cults. Thank you.
Yes, thank you for taking up the point there on tribunals. Any other comments, questions, clarifications, Honourable Van der Merwe? Or better hand, Honourable Barsa, I'm not sure. Yes, thank you.
Thank you, Chair, and thank you very much for the presentation. And we as a committee are certainly very interested in what you have to say. There's two things that I would like to ask you, and one is specifically related to your presentation, and the other is a more general point. The first one was exactly on the same lines as my colleague, member from COPE, had raised about the tribunal. The tribunal's purpose is to adjudicate conflict. And so I think that in making the proposal that you do, we should look to other areas for support for financial or technical or capacity support to the cooperatives. I don't think we should look in that section of the bill, but that's just my thought, because the tribunal's purpose is very specific. It's really to adjudicate conflict. Am I correct, Chief Director? Yeah. So I think we still need that, because from what we've heard, and from our many engagements with the department and with other players in this field, this remains a very serious problem, that often cooperatives don't work because of conflict that arises, which is not able to be resolved. And this is something that we want to try and overcome in going forward. The next thing that I'd be very interested in, and this is slightly off the bill, but we have also heard statistics about the success rate of the cooperatives that already exist in South Africa. I think you mentioned 58,000 that you represent. And our information is that some 80% of those are not succeeding. So I think we need to be able to look at this new amendment to the bill to fix that problem, to make sure that the ones that are already existing are able to work. And in fact, that is our whole purpose. We want to see that there's no abuse of the cooperative system, but also that we put in place a structure, a framework for enablement. And this is where we need your organization to assist us. So those are two of the things. I mean, it is of great concern to us that some cooperatives are unable to be successful, and it is our whole purpose to encourage that success and to ensure that all the good things that cooperatives can do is affected through the passing of the legislation. So thank you very much once again.
Thank you very much, Honourable Van der Merwe, Honourable Mabasa.
Okay. Thank you very much, Comrade Chair. I'm also echoing a word of appreciation and the input made. My question is, following from what Comrade Van der Merwe has articulated on the failure rate of cooperatives, what is it that they act in being amended? What is it that should come into the Act which was not in the Act, which will result in the success of cooperatives? Because we can very easily amend the Act 3 years, 5 years down the line, we still find the failure rate is 80% or so. And that would be a great regret, because it would mean this amending has got no effect. So we rely more on you, who are practitioners on the ground, to say, in addition to what you have articulated here, you think if the Act embraces 1, 2, 3, or if the Act deletes 1, 2, 3, you think that will result in the success on the ground. Thanks, Comrade.
Thank you very much, Honourable Mabasa. Over to yourself, Mr. Barley.
Honorable Chairperson.
I'm not intending to insult this parliament, or I'm trying to get the word that I can use. But I want you to tell me for my honest sincere that if in your own home, in your own properties, which is voluntarily, whether put this but why don't you not think about your tribunal not be informed?
Thank you. And he'll be the one dealing with the legislation, Mr. Farley.
I'm saying, cooperatives in terms of the principles and the principles, why not just come with it? This is in life, built up from this principle. If yourself shall not agree voluntarily, who's going to make you tell that you must work? Do you want to tell me the court can make you to go and make sure that your comp is working? I'm going to be very shocked. I want you to use this word. Pardon me in advance. If in your own house, the husband and the wife, you have got differences, that cannot be resolved by your own. You go to court. Remember, court has got an interest in the communities or in the own criminal affairs. You will kill yourself, not the wife. That's why we have the high rate of divorces, because they will just say, we are fighting, separate. Neither, if they force you to stay together, what will happen? Listen to me. Who's going to speak to whom? If I'm staying with my wife in the house, and then we are going to court about the issue of the court, well, what is going to happen? Are we going to go to the bedroom together? Are we going to sleep together? I'm sorry to use that word, but let me finish by saying, we are coming with a proposal. The money for the installment of the tribunal must go for the education and training of the cooperative. Why not just vote on that? This must be clear, Honorable Chairperson, members of the parliament. We are saying cooperatives the way they were formed. It's because they just went to care. And when money comes, they don't look into the interests of their own cooperatives. We have got a solution to that. We are saying cooperatives must be mentored, must have some technical advice and be supported. Honorable Chair, on the issue of the tribunal, we are saying from our experience that doesn't work, man must go to train and educate the cooperatives, not to fight. That's how we establish economical, functional cooperatives that will grow. And we are saying on these things because we are there. And I will share with you other examples because we don't have time. I'm going to share with practical examples. Cooperatives are autonomous and independent. If somebody doesn't want to be that, let everybody move out. Then cause some of them, then go to court. You cannot establish courts for our people when there's a lot of courts all over. There are common courts in Uganda, in the history of who can go and discuss these issues. There are elders that can do that. There's court, magistrates and so on. We want to come to other courts in terms of educate and establish our people, but the mandate must be done now. I'm telling you this, that you must focus on that. That's the issue of the 80% failure, because our companies are not educated and trained. So we need them to be indicted for the demand. Must be. Remember, we're going to establish board of this piece of the tribunal. Oh, okay, thank you very much. And when they are submitting the report?
Maybe I should put my mic on. Look, you know, whenever one gets somebody who's extremely passionate and committed to something, we can understand the enthusiasm. But let's just, we have had just here on my left a member of the committee needing to clarify this something. But I just want to deal with this. Honourable Mandan River, can we do so when all the questions have been responded? Right. Thank you. Will you proceed, please? Mr. Barley.
Thank you, Chair. That was the issue that we're trying to indicate. Let me quickly go to we spoke about the issue of the failure of cooperatives, that most of them, 90%. I think I've already indicated the reason for that we are not putting more education and training on the cooperatives. And in this, as we say, when we move forward, cooperatives, before they are used that, they must know what is about this. And hence, you see the importance of the assets, because the assets will be all over the country. So that before they form, before they register cooperatives, they must know what they do. So they can also assist cooperatives in terms of their compliance. I think might have already missed the motion in terms of the compliance. And then, of course, I think that the issue of compliance, it must not only be 2 years that after 2 years, if you're not compliant, they discharge you. It's a that kind of a thing. It is 5 years if you're not compliant, matter. Because as we say, property must be, they must comply. We went to the high rate of the failure of the cooperative. But let me use this opportunity on the issue that I mentioned three important issues on the supply and agro-processing of cooperatives. That is very important. And how we do this? Secondary cooperatives must move from the margins of the survival, must be in the mainstream economy. Hence, we put it what we say. And the last thing is the issue of well-resourced cooperatives to do their work being supported. Make no mistake, cooperatives throughout the world have been supported. Even those who were there before, they were supported, as you see them spending. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much, Mr. Bali. I just want to turn to the committee for just one or two follow-ups before we take the next presentation. Honourable Van der Merwe, followed by Honourable Mabasa.
Thank you, Chair. I just wanted to clarify that it is my understanding, there's nobody proposing a court. It's a tribunal. It's a different thing. It has a set of functions, and its purpose is to adjudicate a conflict voluntarily, but its purpose is not to act as a court of law. The second point I want to make is that we are completely supportive of your a plea to provide more support to cooperatives. But I think that is why we are looking at the agency. If you see objectives of the agency, it is to support, promote, and assist the development of cooperatives, provide financial and non-financial assistance to cooperatives, provide, facilitate, and coordinate training and education support. These are the functions that are in. We have to make sure this agency is properly capacitated, but these are going to be in the law to ensure that such support does take place. So I don't want us to talk across purposes about this. My objective would be to say we totally agree with the supportive aspect of what you say. We believe, shall I say, that as we are looking at this bill, it looks to me, on my reading, that the development agency is the vehicle to provide the support. Those are the characters I just thought to emphasize.
Thank you very much, Honourable Van der Merwe, Honourable Mabasa.
Thanks, colleague Chair. The follow-up that I wanted to make is I think even as we stand now, we do have disputes amongst the cooperatives. Some disputes are across between one cooperative and another, and some disputes are within a particular cooperative. So that when the Act proposes that there be a tribunal, it is also informed by that. But the second point that informs the bill is also the courts are normally very inaccessible to, let me say, to the working class. So if cooperatives were not placed at that, did not find themselves at the bottom of the ladder economically, probably we may not be having the tribunal. We wouldn't be proposing that. But we propose it because it would be very difficult for cooperatives to access the cost in terms of costs, frustrations, the dragging on of cases. There are cases that are 5 years, 6 years old. So I think it would be good. But what is the other, what is the international experience with regard to disputes? Is it that other countries don't have tribunals, or do they have tribunals? I will ask for a comment from Tako on that, but I will also ask for a comment from the Chief Director on that, you know, on the international experience, because we are also building on other experiences so that we don't repeat mistakes that have been done by others before. Thank you, Commissioner.
Thank you very much, Honourable Mabasa. I think that you touched on a very important point, as did Honourable Van der Merwe and Honourable McIntosh. I think, as we understood it at the time, but we are still going to continue to explore all of the aspects of the tribunal. But in my experience, in, you know, with the portfolio committee, we've agreed to a number of tribunals being established in order to, very important one, enable easy access to some form of resolution outside the co-op, fair enough, but also the costs involved. And what we cannot forget is that in any and every organization, if there isn't a tribunal established, have immediate recourse in any event to the courts. So this at least is an opportunity not to have to go to a court, but to have a halfway house. But you're not going to stop those co-ops who want to go to court to go to court. That you must accept. Now currently, they can. Nothing to stop them, you see. So I think that was the how we saw the intention, and I'm not talking about this act per se or the bill, but in general, in the legislation that has been tabled here. But just the last point here, I see, is Mr. Dulani Mabuza, who also comes indeed from FANAC, is that right, Sanako? Am I correct? Just a quick word in there to perhaps comment on this from your side as a member of the organization, and then we do have to move on at this particular point. But that does not prevent you from coming back to us with a sort of extra written submission that you feel may add to what has been said and written already. Thank you. But just at this point then, Mr. Mabuza, rather.
Yes. Mine is very, very short. I'm talking in terms of the Section 20 on the tribunal. For SANACO, where we are, what we are saying it is very important to put capacity in terms of cooperatives at the primary level, because where these issues are is at that particular level. Why we got the dispute? People, because they don't understand. We normally say what politicians are saying in public is very important, because if you go and address in business and you say go and organize yourself into fight to form a cooperative, and Jeff will give you 300 something. What do you expect people to do? They form cooperatives. The next thing is 350,000, what happened in KZN, people will share the money, then the dispute will start. Because they don't understand the concept why they form a cooperative. But before they form a cooperative, in like what President was saying, but in terms of people must be trained, and then they understand what is it to be a member of a cooperative. Once they understand that we are thinking as SANACO, then we won't have a dispute in the country. But now the dispute are caused because of the number of registered cooperatives, because people are just registering and consequences wherever they are. They say, go and register, there's a charge in the then access funding and are not still working. That's it. I wanted just to emphasize.
Very much for that. I think that does add to the points already made. Thank you. Now, indeed, thank you to Sanako. We hope that you will stay on and at least hear what other co-ops representatives will also say here. We have before us the Association of Chartered Certified. I'm sure it should be accountants there.
They just missed responding to my one question, to where I was saying what is their observation of the international experience on tribunal.
But I've asked them to come back in writing for this as well. We're running half an hour late now on Mombasa. And if the Mr. Bell may not have heard that, it will come to him in an email as well. The international experience, you know, on the tribunals, you see, you'll be... That's what I'm saying, you know. I think they'll be better served to come back with a more informed response. But right now we have Mr. Edwin Veit, Head of Technical Policy, ACCA, South Africa. Is just one of you there? Is that right, Mr. Van Veit? Right. Okay, well, you certainly look tall enough there to cope with it all. Fine. Can you begin as soon as possible? Do we not have
a hard copy of this input. So I think you can start without Mr. Herman's, can you try to get that going? Do you want to try and get it going, but won't stop us? Okay, we've got it in front of us. Okay, somewhere here. We've got it right here. Fine. So if you can't get it, and anyone else is coming with a laptop, can we make sure it's compatible with whatever it is that we need to try and tie up? But let's proceed. We've got the PowerPoint.
Yes. Okay. Thank you, Chairperson.
We've got two documents. Yeah. We've got two. So, you know, electronics doesn't have to hold us up. I often used to wonder how they hope before we ever went.
Thank you, Honourable Chairperson, Honourable Members, and the co-presenters. It's a great opportunity to be here with you today, and thank also for Parliament for assisting us in making the presentation available. There is two presentations. There's a PowerPoint slide. It's only about three pages, and then there's a submission that we made for Parliament. So the PowerPoint slide is just a very brief summary of the crux of what we're trying to share with you, and then the submission is the details thereof. I am Nicholas van Wyk. I'm representing the ACCA, as well as the SIBAR, the South African Institute of Business Accountants, but all of that is in our written representation. So if I mainly proceed, our comments mainly relate to the financial reporting side and the auditing and the independent review of cooperatives. So the first slide, if you will, it starts off with, it says Companies Act 2008, recognized bodies for independent review. Now, South Africa recently adopted and enacted the New Companies Act. That Companies Act was a major achievement. It took most of 7 to 10 years to complete, with all the consulting that was in with that Act, and finally everybody agreed and we had a New Companies Act. It introduced an alternative to the audit report that we all know of, audits for financial statements. It said, no, maybe there should be something else. And the Companies Act then introduced the thing called the independent review. It's a light audit. It's more affordable. It doesn't go into as depth as an audit, and it's appropriate for certain entities. And a nice balance was achieved in the Companies Act. We also have a third tier of reporting when it comes to financial statements in the Close Corporation Act for more than 20 years. Businesses were very happy and still are with the accounting office reports. So, the slide that's in front of you, it says the Companies Act 2008, what does it do? It recognizes all these professional bodies I listed for you, the ACC and IAC, SIGA, CIMA, CIA, SIGA, and SIPA, to issue independent review reports. And then there's a little line and it says members of the IRBA, in other words, listed auditors, are also allowed to issue these independent review reports. But you can get the picture. It's a nice group of people, there's nice competition, it reduces cost, and it obviously increases service delivery, because these companies cannot choose where they want to go to. The second slide is the Close Corporation Act. Now, South Africa's Close Corporation Act recognizes bodies for accounting officer engagement. So that's not the independent review, it's the accounting officer, but you can see it's the same body. ACCA, SIGA, SIPA, SIBA, SIGA, all recognized as accounting officer bodies. And then I'm going to get to the last slide, and suddenly there's a big issue there, crosses all over those names, and we have a cooperative amendment bill in front of us, which suddenly says, no, these guys can't issue the report. So it's obvious. If the company says we can, if the Close Corporation says we can, if 9 other statutes, which I haven't listed here, says that these other entities are eligible to issue reports, then there's a problem maybe with the cooperative amendment bill to say that they can't. And the only entity left in the cooperative amendment bill is IRBA. It reduces from 30,000 service providers to 4,500 service providers for cooperatives, which will cause a real predicament for cooperatives seeking persons to issue reports on their financial statements. So if you will, I'm now going to just run through the written representation.
I've listed in my written documentation the background to the Cooperative Act. The current Cooperative Act, to my mind, when it comes to auditing, it's not balanced. Maybe it was an issue of resources at the register of cooperatives, but what the current Act says is that everybody must be audited unless there's a case to be made that they should be audit exempted. And the reasons are listed, maybe too costly, they don't have adequate resources, they can't get hold of an auditor, whatever the reason is, the registrar in the current Act can apply his mind and say, alright, you're small or you don't have costs or it's not appropriate for you, maybe choose something else. The something else obviously was a problem in that entities therefore had to voluntarily look for something. And this is where our members then come in and say, listen, the Act says you or the registrar says you exempt, but this is what we can offer you. I can offer you an independent review report, I can offer you an accounting officer report, I can offer you a compilation report, and all these reports are legislated or regulated to some degree. So our members and the guys and the other institutes which I've listed all currently provide services for cooperatives by this exemption route. But the new proposals will remove that from them and so they can't then issue reports. And the general comments, I've noticed an issue that legitimate and reasonable expectations, I think I just highlighted it. It's many professional bodies and 30,000 people have an expectation of how it was in the past and why can't we proceed with it going into the future. And it's a serious service delivery issue on cooperatives. A limited scope of the auditing profession actually, and perhaps the drafter, this is just a suggestion, should perhaps just really look at the auditing profession itself. The current provisions of the, in the amendments, the cooperative amendment bill says that the IRBA will regulate the independent reviewer. But as it stands currently, the Auditing Profession Act doesn't allow for the auditing profession or the IRBA to regulate any other profession other than auditors. I've listed to you the background to the Auditing Profession Act. There was the NAL Commission of Inquiry many, many years back. There was the Ministerial Review Panel appointed by Minister Trevor Manuel many, many years back, culminating in the Auditing Profession Act. We say auditors are so important for the African economy, we cannot dilute their importance by throwing in other professionals with them. It's important that auditors should be regulated separately from anybody else. And hence we've got the Auditing Profession Act which regulates auditors. The current Auditing Profession Act, which received an legal opinion from the Cliff Decker attorney firm, stating that the Auditing Profession Act doesn't allow for the regulation of any other report provider other than auditors for the reasons which I stated. So the drafter should be just very careful in giving a particular power to the IRBA, which the Act itself doesn't give to them, which Parliament doesn't give to them. And I'm not saying they shouldn't be expanded, their role. I'm just saying if their role is to be expanded, there should be a proper consultation process, which I'm not aware of. On my point number four, there's a shortage of accounting skills in South Africa. There's 22,000, I've listed the figures there, there's a CETA called the FACET, and they did some research, and they said there's a shortage of accountants. So to my mind, again, if you remove other bodies from this, from issuing reports for cooperatives, then you're just exacerbating the shortage. And then I've listed the specific comments to make it easier for drafters into what we would like to see change. It's all the paragraphs listed, the definition of the independent reviewer and what he can do. Basically, to summarize, we're requesting it to be aligned to the Companies Act and the Close Corporation Act and to allow these entities which have been issuing reports for cooperatives to continue doing so. I appreciate the fact that the drafter wants to strengthen that reporting regime, but I would humbly suggest that the current way of going about it might not necessarily be appropriate. Thank you.
Just quickly, Mr. Nell, while you're still on the floor, although if you could just turn off your mic for a minute, and Vape, my apologies, it's Nicholas, isn't it? I think I was thinking, a dear member of my family called Nicholas as well, probably thinking him. Mr. Van Vape, can you just share with us almost what we asked, the question that was directed at Mr. Barley, with respect to the auditing and co-ops and the way the audit profession is handled? What is the international experience, the regional one, say, at Kenya, and then the international one, for example, Spain? Thanks.
My expertise is not necessarily related to cooperatives per se, but more reporting in general. The European Union recognizes, like South Africa now, different people to issue reports for entities, legal entities. So the question is, when should a legal entity that has certain privileges be required to be audited? And is there an alternative to this audit? And is it is appropriate to appoint other persons other than auditors to issue certain type of reports? And that debate kind of has been settled in the European Union and other places to say that the audit is a particular type of report. It's mostly listed companies and public interest companies that should be audited due to their size and their impact. But when it comes to lower tier, mid-tier type entities, the international movement is away from audit to alternative, and this is where the independent review comes in. So the second question is then, if we're going to allow an alternative to the audit, who should be able to issue this? And then you obviously need to be country-specific and say, who's currently providing reports for legal entities? And we've got a 20-year history with the Third Corporation Act, a thing called accounting officers, and all those independent reviewers. So all we're saying is, there should be an alternative, yes, but that alternative can't be limited to auditors only. There's no international precedent for that. And in any case, it won't align to our own Companies Act and Third Corporation Act, in that it allows others to issue similar types of alternative reports.
Thank you very much, Mr. Mbeki. Honourable Mandeverba, Honourable Mabasa.
Thank you very much. I think it's fair that we should tell Mr. Van Veek that we've already had a presentation from FICA and CIPA. And the good news is that you all agree on some of these problems that you've identified. And I think that it certainly is something, if I may speak generally about how our committee is feeling about it, that we're going to look into, definitely, all the questions that you raised. Because our objective is not to make the accounting processes for cooperatives more onerous than they are for companies or closed corporations. So what you say is of great relevance to what we've heard already, but also to our deliberations going forward. I think what I should propose is that we study your specific comments, which are listed on the extract from the bill, and they're your own comment in detail as we go forward and look to possible amendments to make sure that we don't do this something more complicated than, and alignment is important, obviously, with the companies and the Closed Corporation Act. So it may be just on a positive note to say thank you. We've heard a similar story before. You guys are all on the same page, you accountants and auditors, and I suppose that's good news. Thanks.
Certainly clears the way, doesn't it, a bit
there.
Honourable
Mbasa. Thank you very much, Comrade Chair. Mr. Van Veek, thank you for the input. My question is, looking back briefly, will you agree with me that the auditing, the accounting profession has not been very sensitive to SMMEs as well as cooperatives, you know, in terms of how they charge them, FISA is charging well established firms. I just want your comment so that, you know, even as we go forward, we are informed by your observations in the past or even as things stand. Thanks, Kapucha.
Thank you very much, Honourable Mbasa. Yes. So if you could just respond briefly to those two comments.
Well, thank you for the opportunity and for the good news. Perhaps just to take the discussion a bit further, auditing and independent review is the after-the-fact reports. So it's 6 months or 9 months after the fact that the entity will hear what its financial state position is. Now, I just heard my colleague here on the cooperative saying, and the question was on how do you improve the sustainability of cooperatives. My solution would be in France or in Italy, rather than appointing an external report provider, they make it mandatory to appoint an internal accountant to say every cooperative or every certain entity in those jurisdictions should appoint an internal person of specific qualifications to assist with decision making. That, to my mind, would be a just-in-time approach to help them when needed, not 6 months after the fact. So it's moving. I don't know, external reporting isn't the issue. To my mind, it's controlling on the day-to-day. And there you need an accountant or an internal auditor or something else. So maybe, and I would love to make a further submission, if allowed, to the committee maybe, on alternatives to how you could improve the financial sustainability. Not the external report. That's 6 months after the fact. It's useless.
Now, how are we going to help you now? Then on the issue of the IMBA, Madam Chair, I may make the following comment, and it's with great respect to the IMBA and the auditing profession. I think they're doing a wonderful job, and we're number one in the world when it comes to auditing. We just received that wonderful prize. But the second submission came about in the Companies Act as well, that the Auditing Profession Act, for the law, when it started in 2005, had a very specific function for auditors and the IMBA to regulate auditors in the public interest sector and for listed companies. But of late, we've seen that kind of watered down to include possibly BE verification agents. I think it might have been in front of you. And now we see with the Cooperative Act as well to kind of expand the remit of the IMBA. I would just caution the Portfolio Committee and perhaps ask that you guys perhaps discuss with the National, the Portfolio Committee on Finance, on their views of the Auditing Profession Act. Because we as the Department of Trade and Industry and all the people working in that sector, we want to appoint experts, so we kind of naturally migrate to auditors. But the auditors have a function in terms of the Portfolio Committee National Trade or Finance for listed companies and public interest companies. So we can't, as the Department of Trade or guys that seek to enhance business development, run to a thing that want to regulate big banks and big listed industries. Mindset is different, and it's got a different approach. It's got and that approach is wonderful within that sphere of the regulation. But when we come to trade and industry development, you need something other than the regulation. You need the system, and you need development. And this is where accountants comes in. And that is the last point on the question that was asked. So there's two responses. From a member's perspective, as an accountant, obviously I would want to do services to everybody, and I would want to run it cost effectively. There's high competition within the market, so there's really not an issue. Maybe from an institutional perspective, the professional body, there should be done more. When it comes to cooperatives, more guides on how their members can assist cooperatives, and perhaps more networking that could be created. On accounting standards, I'm sure that more can be done. So on a regulatory side, more can be done to assist cooperatives, but on a business level, I think there's good competition and good prices, so I don't think there's an issue there.
Thank you very much, Mr. Van Beek. And certainly, if there's anything else you'd like to add, but as has already been pointed out, we, your sister sort of institution has come very much within the same framework. But do feel free, when listening to the inputs, etc., and perhaps reading them, to come back with anything further if you so wish. Thank you very much for coming here this morning. And then, members, we're going to be moving on to the South African Woman in Cooperatives. The South African Woman in Cooperatives. And looking at that here, so that I'm just quite certain who we're looking at, South African Woman. We've got here Ms. Pamola Makwela, K-U-E-L-E, and we also have the President, Ms. Tipsy Mamaditaba Netswane. Where is the President? Right. Are you all ready to share with us? Fine. Yeah, we have. When you get to the European Union, you get a few more because every chair the President. So they love that word in Europe. Presidente, you know? Anyway, over to yourselves.
Chairperson, I'm actually sad this morning. I thought I would be celebrating Banyana Banyana. But anyway, yeah, these things do happen. Let me take this opportunity to greet you, Honorable Chairperson, and your entire committee, and also greet the Chief Director of from DTI, and the Registrar of Cooperatives, and let me also greet my fellow cooperators, President of SANACO, Tate Bale, and your crew. I can see Mr. Masebo is also here, and others that I did not notice, and ladies and gentlemen. Chairperson, it is an honor and a privilege for us to make a submission before this important committee that would actually change the lives of ordinary men of South Africa, especially women. We don't take your responsibility for granted. You have a massive, massive work in front of you. And also, I'm all excited that I am making the submission on the very, very important month of Mandela, and also because we are just about to enter the Women's Month. Maybe let me start by taking this opportunity of introducing South African Women Incorporated, which is in short called SAWICO. SAWICO is a national structure of cooperatives belonging to women of South Africa in all sectors of economy, irrespective of their political affiliation, their culture, also color. Women have been in the forefront of poverty alleviation for decades of years. And they've done it through suffering, they've done it through creating savings for their families, for the improvement of their livelihood of their families. And also I'm sure the chief director will agree with me that the cooperative that has been registered in South Africa, women are in the majority. And that is why, Chairperson, we are here this morning. And Chair, we have been inspired actually by our mothers and sisters of 1955 who braved the weather conditions during the apartheid year. Chair, SAWICO is actually a secondary cooperative that emerged to be a voice for all women cooperatives in South Africa. We aim to facilitate programs that seek to address stagnation within the cooperative sector. We are also guided by the six principles of cooperatives enshrined in the Act number 14 of 2005, that is cooperatives cooperating with other cooperatives. Chair, I must make mention that we also affiliate to an APEC body, SANACO, who the president is seated next to. So, Chair, we are independent in our existence. Our vision, Chair, is to break the cycle of poverty among women and their families by 2020 through a critical and viable cooperative infrastructure. And our objectives are to provide a business incubator facility for early stage and startup cooperatives. And we're doing this, Chair, to address challenges and problems that have been alluded to by this House earlier. And what among the things that we do is cooperative management, and that includes governance of cooperatives, because we believe that when cooperators do not understand governance, then that's when you will have conflict. We also provide financial management, and that is where now the likes of Mr. Van Veeg come in to assist us. We also have cooperatives with the supplier management. Here we are talking of production or any service. We support our startup cooperatives with that, because we believe that cooperatives are being initiated by people who've never been in class. Some people, because there is a grant of 350,000, you know, they go into cooperatives for wrong reasons. So we are there to assist them. Also, we provide process management that leads to the end user. If a product is being accepted, and then we take them through marketing until the end user. And also we believe that most cooperatives do not comply. They do not submit relevant documentation
wanted by CDTI, hence they cannot even access the 350,000 that is the chairperson. So we can't, that's where we come in. We also provide mentorship programs, and also we don't just leave them there, we have aftercare services. So we believe in we actually designed a model that we believe in, and we call this model an incubator. Like I have said before, that we incubate women cooperatives. In the next page, you will see there that the model that we call is taking the center core, exploiting the center core, and then the next level, we have professionals and mentors that we partner with. They come in the likes of Mr. Van Beek. And then we have now also the third level is about graduated cooperatives. We believe that they should come back and assist those ones who are starting and share their experiences and challenges with them. And also the last layer would be obviously government and other relevant partners, where we believe we cannot do without our government in terms of financial support, technical support, and other any other relevant support. Chairperson, we are very, very excited about the bill. However, we would want to add our voice on the following. Firstly, we have want to comment on the amendment of Section 6 of the Act, which talks to a secondary cooperative. So we are saying a secondary cooperative should be formulated by 5 primary cooperatives as opposed to 2. And those should be of the same sector. When we talk of sectors, we're talking women sector, we're talking youth sector, we're talking people with disability, etc., etc. And or we should be looking at economic sectors as well, like an agricultural sector can start a secondary cooperative. Mr. Bali earlier on alluded into agro-processing, and this is where agro-processing should be seen, chairperson, happening. We also consider commodities. For example, when people produce broiler chickens, for instance, they can come together and have a secondary cooperative and produce, because the market is looking at quantity and quantity. Therefore, that is why the existence of that secondary cooperative is very, very critical. Our second submission would be amendment of Section 16A, which talks to the APEC body. We are saying the APEC body should be formulated by also 5 secondary cooperatives of any sector from a minimum of 5 provinces. Why we are saying that here is we have a view that an APEC body should not be too many. We should try and avoid a proliferation of this important body. And also we are saying there should be a distinction between an APEC body and a tertiary level of cooperative. Because in the bill you may find that it's written tertiary or an APEC body. To us, APEC body is at a very, very high level, whereby an APEC body, I'm talking now the likes of Sanaco, should be able to come to government and lobby for policies, etc., etc. So that is why it is important to manage and control, you know, formation of APEC bodies. We do not want to see too many APEC bodies, otherwise we will lose focus chain. My next point would be on the conversion of companies into cooperatives. The bill here, I see there's an omission that those companies should also have minimum of 5 people at least. Because you may find that some CCs have only 2 people operating, or even 1 person. Now, are we saying that 1 person can be allowed to start a cooperative. So we have realized that there is an omission, Chairperson, on this one. The next amendment is Section 8.7, which talks to the Advisory Council. Chairperson, we believe, as a WICO, that the Advisory Council appointed by the Minister should at least include 50% of cooperative members representing women, youth, people with disability, and also include rural people. And that we see it as a fair representation. And my next take on, even I did not put it on in black and white, is a cooperative development agency. We welcome the establishment of this important agency. And why are we saying so? It's because cooperatives have a unique nature. Therefore, they have to be treated in a special manner. Because cooperatives addresses the social, the economic, as well as the cultural issues. Therefore, we see this cooperative development agency playing a very, very critical role. We also welcome the chapter that was raised by Mr. Bale earlier on. And maybe, Chair, answering or trying to answer what Mr. Mabasa raised before, we are saying pre-incorporative training is very, very critical prior to registration of cooperatives, and that would alleviate challenges that are found in cooperatives. And as for the tribunal, would want to submit our opinion in writing based on the issues that were raised earlier on. I think you should.
No, thank you very much to Zwicko, and I think that's very constructive to see that they've written input on the tribunals. It will certainly add to our discussions. Well, because there we have it, submission by Zwicko, that's the South African one in cooperatives. And if we can see by a show of hands, that members who wish to comment or ask any questions, right, on my left, Honourable Van Merwe, Honourable Mabasa. Honourable Mabasa?
No, I want to ask the same question that I asked first of saying, what are your comments about the auditing area? You know, that area of getting, because my belief has always been that the auditing areas have been a bit too distant from cooperatives, simply because they are too expensive, you know, etc. So what are your comments on that? And then the last one is your international observation on the tribunal, Lex College.
I think the tribunal comments are coming in writing, so you'll leave that one aside for the oral response. Yeah. Honourable Barta. Yes. Honourable Mandamera, Honourable Salah.
Thank you, Chair, and thank you very much for the presentation. And for us who are trying to study how best we can implement our policies and our principles, it's really useful to get those specific recommendations. And may I thank you for that, because it really helps us. I'm very interested in your numbers, that you want five primaries to make a secondary, and that you want, you know, and that you're split between a tertiary and an apex. These are really things of great interest to us. And I wonder if you could just motivate a little bit more about why you wish those particular numbers to be the case, because it sounds very sensible to me. But we are eventually going to have to fight with the department, you know, about, and they're going to have all their arguments. So we want all our arguments, like our little ducks in a row. So that would be very interesting to me, because it sounds extremely sensible, and I would just like a little bit more clarity on that. The other thing is, we've got to this point, and this is a point by the way, I'm in full support of your advisory council appointments. 30% women is a non-negotiable, as far as I'm concerned. I don't know about my colleagues here, but I bet you they'll support me too. the other point that I want to raise is, we have come up in pre-presentation from Mr. Bale and from others, is this whole question of pre-support. In other words, getting cooperatives, getting the information to people before they start making mistakes. And this is very important. Now, I've been reading again the objectives of the agency, and I want to ask you whether you think this is sufficient or we need to strengthen this. And it applies to everybody, really, who's made. Because it says here that 91B, small c, provide business support services, which, amongst others, include pre-registration support, registration, business plan development, mentorship, and aftercare cooperatives, as well as access to market services. Okay. Is it going to cover it? Is that going to be enough? Because clearly, from my reading, this agency is the one that must do this work. Okay. Another important one is to provide an industry support within the agency's capacity to enable individual cooperatives to become and remain operational. These are key words, and we've got to make sure they're implemented. In your view, are those going to be sufficient legal words to ensure that we get support in at the right place, at the right time, to ensure sustainability in the future?
Thank you very much, Honourable Sulla.
Thank you, Honourable Chairperson. My apologies for coming late. I went beyond my control to attend. Thank you for the presentation. Quite mind-boggling presentation, and I want to ask mind-boggling questions as well. Looking at the organizational structure of your proposed amendment, looks like the outcomes should come up with two organizations here. One organization of supporting organizations, which would be like a federation-like, where you have your mother body with independent organizations affiliated to it, but active in various different areas of operations of the corporate, such as training, others would focus on creating organizations, others would focus on business. But the other structure that I see emerging is the cooperative itself. That you would have your line of levels of structure, from primary level, secondary level, to apex level of kind of cooperative, which would then have to be supported across the various organizational entities that will be in existence, and that all of these should emerge to get together at the agency level with more government. Is that the future that I'm getting correct, or am I reading you out of context? Because you see, whatever we do, our outcomes must be to create a vehicle that can make cooperatives accountable, sustainable, and manageable. I want to get if we are sitting in the same page, or are the world lost?
Thanks. Yes, no, recently your latency was noted, and we're pleased that you are here to participate. Thank you very much. It's over to yourself now, Ms. Makwela, is it? Right, thank you. Because you were so quiet with your head down, sorry.
No, I was trying to get hold of the bill, and I was a bit confused. In fact, that amendment of sessions, which kept putting his 80, not 8.7, so I was back in point 8.7. Madam Chair, I'm sorry this is my question. And we know about Kingdom Afadi, Kingdom Bogoto, okay? But I think what we ought to know is that women have, in poor communities, have been the people who have really cooperated and uplifted people throughout the world. And you mentioned the Stokvelds, which is perhaps the most brilliant example in South Africa. But my concern about co-ops, and Mr. Lawrence Bale, I think, emphasized, and I think he's got the real spirit of a co-op, and so does Salga, which is a co-op is a bunch of volunteers. They get a vision, they work together, they're honest people, they trust each other, and they start a co-op. And eventually they can become over 10 or 20, 50 years very big businesses. And there's a number throughout the world, including South Africa. Now, my concern is, in your asking, for example, in Section 8.7, one has a complete paradigm shift, whereas the whole spirit of this law, as I understand it, is for the DTI to say, we've got people with energy, ability, like Mr. Barney's grandfather, who said you must build your own house, and we want to help these people. We want to get behind them and support them and create a structure to assist them. And then you're asking that, no, the minister must now do some social engineering, and we must tell the cooperatives what they must do. But I reckon probably 60% of the cooperative leaders are female anyway. So I just have a slight discomfort with this shift to say, we must be politically correct, you know, and they can't just be volunteerists here. We must tell them what to do. And I just want to mention that to comment, if you want to take it away, you needn't answer the question. That is the reason why I was mumbling about this, my colleague, Honourable Fanny Mabbitt, saying what she did. There's another debate about racism, genderism, and human rights. But that's another debate, and this isn't the place to have. Thank you.
Well, just a minute there. Genderism, sexism, are human rights. So I'm not sure why you would want to separate them. Thank you.
Madam Chair, I can have the debate here, but that isn't the place.
But
I'm just saying it's a debate, Madam Chair. I just said to you, it's a debate. Obviously.
Let me make this clear. When you begin to chair this committee, I'll respect your hand. I'm chairing it, not you. Fine. Over to Sarwick.
Thank you, Chair. Let me start by responding to a comment about auditing. I think, Chair, a cooperative has a component of business in it. And it is very, very critical that each business is audited. And it helps both the cooperative itself as well as government to see if the cooperative is successful or should it wind up or et cetera, et cetera. So it is very, very critical that the likes of Mr. Van Lake come in to assist cooperatives so that we can ensure sustainability of cooperatives. And coming to the second point, it was about the numbers that are there. The Act said when you register a primary cooperative, you need minimum of 5 people. Now my question is, why not with a secondary cooperative? Why not with a tertiary cooperative? Obviously, when this number was brought, was decided upon, there was a survey that was conducted in order for whoever came up with the number, put it in the Act. And we believe also a cooperative that to avoid proliferation of too many secondary cooperatives, we should limit that to at least 5. I mean, if you're talking bioproduction, for instance, take for instance agriculture. You know, you find one co-op producing 200 birds per month. Will that cooperative submit or
provide credit to Woolworths, obviously it will be a no. So if there are other cooperatives, at least they are large in number, then they can beat the likes of bigger companies in terms of supplying to Woolworths. And also it goes with the tertiary level. And my comment with separating tertiary for APEX, we believe that APEX could play a very, very major role, and it should be treated in a special way. APEX, to me, should be a policy formulation body that would assist government or lobby or advocate government formulating policy. And that's why, if you were listening to Mr. Ali earlier about the tribunal, you know, if we had that APEX body being given that status, I'm sure we would easily say, let tribunals go to APEX. But having said that, our APEX bodies should be trained. They need training themselves. If perhaps the decide that we give APEX body a latitude to have tribunals, then they have to be trained before they could do that, so that they can understand conflicts and so forth. And about the pre-support, I believe that we need to be talking to SIPs. Prior to registration, people should understand what they get themselves into, looking at the nature of the cooperative. We are saying a cooperative addresses social, economical, as well as, you know, cultural needs. So it shows that it has a unique nature. Therefore, I think SIPs listen, we need to be saying before people register cooperatives. Right now we're sitting with more than 52,000 of cooperatives, but only 6% of those cooperatives are in this. Most of them are not. So which means we have to go back to the drawing board and start and train them. And that is why the existence of the WICO is to look at those who are starting, to say we cannot just start without doing the pre-training, and also for sustainability reasons. The other point was raised by Mr. Silla. And Mr. Silla, actually Sawiko is a woman cooperative, and we are at the secondary level. We affiliate to the APEX body, which assists us in terms of policies. When we have problems, we run to the APEX body. So we're not talking at a level. It is purely we are at a secondary level assisting the primary cooperative. If you look at our objectives, that will tell you that we also partner. We have an open door for partners to say, if you are in finance, come in. And that is why there's a model. If you look at the second level of our model, it's got professionals there who are our partners, and also the last part, which you know, talks of government and other partners. So we do not see ourselves as an APEX body in future. We are still at the secondary level, looking at production and services, providing of services. And yes, answering your question in that case, in cooperatives, women are in the majority. And we believe that Sawiko understands the ills of women better than any other person. And we cannot shy away from the gender. Sawiko is there to assist women. And we do it, you know, we try it. Thank you, Chair.
I think there is still a lot that you can add, as I've said to the other co-ops and so on structures, if you would like to submit anything further that you have in writing, and if we want to raise anything else, we will certainly also indicate that to yourselves. But thank you very much for being here with us this morning, and what we're going to do, members, is to take a very short tea break because it's Friday and many people always think of getting home, we want to just have a very short tea break, 7 minutes, please. We would like to definitely be started as soon as possible. It is just 3 minutes past 11. Thank you.
Thank you.
be amended again, so that we are able to see functional management and board members at the primary level. That will also include that the individual members will have enough opportunity of putting their resources together because of their majority and their contribution to manage and make sure that that plan is functional.
Are you presenting this document here?
Yes.
Because here this is not saying what you're saying.
If you look at page one, it says...
Yes, I'm also on page one. Now,
yes.
If you've changed your submission, let us know.
On page one, chapter it says...
Now, just read this, point two. We therefore propose at least a minimum of five, but now you're moving to ten.
No, no, the first number one. Number one, individual members to form a primary.
Oh, yeah.
All right, thank you. Thanks very much. So we are saying the individual members to form a primary must increase to 10 members because of the reasons I've stated. And the second point that you just hear me now is the number of primaries form a secondary. And we are saying that is also adding to the death rate of cooperatives because only what? Two primaries that form what? A secondary. And we're proposing to say this number should not be reduced to a minimum of what? Five or six primaries. So that there should be a proper kind of management and board establishment. Not only that, it will help us as cooperatives to make sure that they're used in those cooperatives. Because if there are only two primaries and they have their 10, definitely from what they experience on the ground. That's the challenge. It adds to not understanding the function, the commitment, and why they're in cooperatives. The guys even take into account that there's no initial education that went in or that goes in before the cooperatives are established. So therefore, the only exception we're proposing to be, only if it is agriculture, that the primary has got 60 members as individuals, yes. Then the two primary cooperatives can form a secondary. Because on those basis, you have reason to establish board, management, programs, you have the members to monitor exactly what's happening. They will be able to put policies in place. The third point, we have alluded to in the amendment to the Act, is the question of those secondary cooperatives as well. That in our experience, the two secondaries really, it comes up as a mushrooming exercise where it does not help us development of cooperatives because either they have an interest or sort of just competing for the sake of competing. And we are saying that in view of that, for us to have a really kind of proper functionality of those cooperatives, we need to have five secondary cooperatives. Not necessarily based on province, because that would also deny the freedom of what establishment of those cooperatives in terms of development. Because they might be sectoral ones that they want to establish what? An epic. So you cannot deny them that they want to establish that because then you don't form that or category of a national structure because they are not broad in terms of the property. Because agriculture sectors in agriculture in cooperative for 10 sectors. So each sector can come with what? That time, but there must be a minimum number. And that's what we're proposing here. In line with religion to say the educators then will be talking about the education program in terms of failing, there will be adequate attention to the development of cooperatives. And it will also help these ethics bodies to assist those secondaries because they know now that they're going through the process of development. They understand legislation because our role is to also put education into those secondaries, not just to establish it, but also guide and develop strategies of putting it together with them. The other point number four that we're making input is on the base of the cooperative development agency, which in our view as NACOSA, we would like this to be established. Because it will help us to address these challenges that we're facing now, that we don't have any institution that addresses those issues. We are under run to digitize as for what? For assistance.
And that is the area where saying it is important for us to have the institution established as soon as possible. So we agree with the amendment. The only areas we add on the amendment is that we would like the year report of this institution, not 3 years, a yearly report, not only to the minister, that the ethics body should not be given that, so that when we able to assess how much resources have gone into our primary, secondary, all the cooperatives, and assess the progress thereof. Because it will not give, it will not help us if it just goes to the minister that court. But also to add to that, is that it will be able also to be a vehicle that will be creating an interaction between this committee, the ethics structure, and DGI, to say, where are we on policy? What are the challenges? What are the gaps? Because at the moment, we haven't seen this happen. Only today, perhaps the opportunity that we see this thing, and we're proposing that to us in the legislation, so that we're able to interact with you and report if we're making progress for their challenges. And if funds are used adequately in terms of what the intended program, because in our view, legislation should be saying the program for this should be guided by other cooperatives. In terms of the program, should be driven by membership of the cooperative. So the structures, the ethics board, which we bring a key on, working together with the DDI, and particularly the chief director and the staff, to make sure that those resources are properly what? Money. To make sure that we give you adequate support, that investment to the primary is done in the manner that they were expected, there's a change and a channel strategy. By the way, we should report to you, we have already established a program for the University of Fort Hare. For those countries to run, to make sure that we run the mobilization and creation of cooperatives in the country from, we started from EJP. So that we can address this more rightly. We have promised the minister when we achieved it that we want to change, to reduce the mortality rate from 80% to less than 50% in the next 3 years, Madam President. And we would like to see this happening with your support. That's why we're proposing a yearly meeting with you, so that we can be able to check the progress. If we're making mistakes, you'll be able to guide us. The last point that we are making, that in view of this CI plan should also be reviewed from 351 million. Because it contributes to what? To death rate of cooperatives. That should also be targeted in legislation with the links, properly linked on particular key areas that we need in primary to access those funds. Proper business plan. But it should be reviewed because those are resources that will make turn around. And also the procurement of the provinces. It's a key challenge that cooperatives are looking at seriously on procurement of cooperatives. Government. So we would like, particularly hospitals, prisons, cooperatives are there to provide, but we are not given. So one legislation to be very precise. I think that Barry was saying 30%. We would rather do 25% because that is the hub of the economic change. If we can be able to change that, I'm sure, Madam Speaker, the legislation will be talking to us for great change and turnaround. We will also forward the additional input in terms of auditing. On cooperatives, one of the areas of experience from EBGMN, they have got auditing cooperatives with clear guidelines, and here we don't have in our registration. And it piles work to the registrar, because they want reports, and the cooperatives, we don't have any clear guidelines, the private are not at the sanctioner, because there's no investment. No one, even government, can put money in the primary which is not functioning, with 5, 6, 3 people, 4 people. Surely it doesn't make sense, in business sense. So we're saying we're going to make on the tribunal, we would like to say the training and the implementation should go hand in hand. That is the proposal to legislation, because it is our interest that while we are developing, the conflict in cooperatives must be addressed. Therefore, the training of cooperatives on the tribunal, so they must understand they have put that interest into the administration of that institution. The educational training, we propose that legislation should include curriculum, cooperative curriculum, so that we can enhance those skills, which are a very serious step. We cannot establish colleges if we don't follow the curriculum. And that is in the hands of the higher education ministry, but through the portfolio committee, we think that we are ready to engage the higher education minister with the institutions that were identified to sit down and begin that program with your support. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Mr. Maseko, the National Apex Cooperative Federation of South Africa, and that's now, there were a number of points you made, which you acknowledged are not in the submission itself, and as and you are already going to be forwarding to us other aspects of that you would like included, if you could just peruse what you've sent us and then add the points. Some of them, in fact, they were all important, but some of them are of particular interest to us in this regard. And then just send that along to Mr. Hermans in the same way that came along. We really appreciate this, Mr. Mfeko. Members, you know, much of the points that have been referred to here have already been referred to, but there have been one or two changes here, you know, additions. I wonder if we could just take two hands, Honourable McIntosh.
Madam Chair, thank you. Compliments to Mr. Marcego. I think it's very well sent out and some very interesting proposals, which I'm sure the departments can look at. I wonder if you could just help me, and I know it's not important because it's the evidence we're looking at, but I don't quite understand how the National Apex Cooperative Federation of South Africa, the South African National Apex Cooperative, are they two completely separate organizations? I see you're established, your registration number is 2011, so you're a very new group on the block. Just for a matter of information, I look, the contents of the presentation, I'm sure we will absorb, but I'd just like to have clarity on that, please, Mr. Masego. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you very much, Mr. McIntosh. Just a minute. Thank you very much. Last point here, Honourable Salah.
Question I want to put, but I'm not sure if we have discussed it exhaustively in this meeting, but I want to put it, even if we don't get an exhaustive answer, we'll sleep over it. There are a number, a whole number of organizations active in cooperatives in South Africa. What I am not sure of is whether they speak to each other, whether the right is talking to the left. But I dream a situation where we should have a direction, one direction in this country, towards which the cooperatives are moving. Whether we call them in accordance with sectors, begin to say we have sectoral cooperatives, manufacturing cooperatives, and so on and so on. Or, because there's, it's one thing to discuss cooperatives in general, but it's something to discuss how the cooperatives in South Africa function. Like if you talk about the automobile industry, now you have different car manufacturing companies, they all abide by one umbrella organization, which then guides how automobile industry in South Africa is managed. You know, that kind of thing. I'm not sure if we are moving in that direction or whether we can be able to answer the question, exhaustively in this meeting today.
We probably can't answer it exhaustively in this meeting, let me say that at the outset. We probably will be in a better position to do so, perhaps after the study visit and the subcommittee has done some work. But let me say that at the outset. But that certainly would be where we would want to be going with this. But over to you, Mr. Masiko. And I just wondered where your colleague was, the national speaker, you know, Ms. Katana. Primary rights.
Thank you, Abed, and I think there are two questions. Whether complex or not, I think these are the areas because they affect, directly affect. Apart from the test area, yes, we do speak to each other because we're cooperatives. We must cooperate. They're guided by same principles. Like car manufacturing, you have already said, we have put one timber. And in Kimberley, we made a proposal to say, as cooperatives, perhaps one of the issues which we're debating was also to establish a single apex body should be a process. Because
because we must take into account the constitutional imperative of the country. That we are saying we cannot deny establishment of other epic bodies while we see 80% of death rate of cooperatives and we are fighting or either we end on establishing one epic body. What will be the result then? Have we achieved the first goal of reducing the mortality rate of cooperatives in the country? The answer is no. We would be happy as Nakosa if we are saying we have achieved the objective that the number of the mortality rate percentage has been reduced to 45%. Then we are saying, now how many cooperatives are in the country? Who will be guiding this process to see if we form one ethics body, what are the requirements? What will be the process? We have proposed in the meantime we can establish a cooperative business council or chamber where the two or whichever would be together discuss what is the issue and give the report, engage government as one voice. I think that's what we propose to our authorities. Where they're still looking at that, they'll give us a feedback and we think that is the best vehicle we would start moving forward on a budget. If we really have to play a key role in the development of cooperatives, we cannot just jump. It's a process that we need to accept in the true sense of it. And that is one area we're going to make input to as well. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Ms. Maseko. You've given us a lot of food for talk, so also have, of course, all of the co-op structures here. And we hope that you will continue to, if you can't join us directly, to follow the process as the department responds on some of the issues that have come up. And we will certainly keep you informed of that schedule and process so that those of you who can attend, it would be, I think, quite important to attend to hear what it is that you have raised here, what has been taken into account by the department, and of course then following that ourselves as a committee of parliament. So thank you very much for coming down here and also for listening to your colleagues and hearing what they had to contribute as well. The co-ops are very welcome, all the structures to remain here. However, we do need space to be made for the National Consumer Tribunal, is it, to move across here where we can see them. So we are looking at exactly where Mr. Maseko is, that bank. If that bank can move to the right, you know, here if you like, or to the left. All right. And then if the National Consumer Tribunal can come in there where the parliamentary liaison officer is. Yeah, all right, we'll report that to the, what is it, the supply chain management. Yeah, well, I hear from good authority, for those who keep wondering what legislation is coming up, of course we've got the co-ops here, but we're all forgetting the triple B, double E, I think it is, pretty soon it's going to cabinet, and that's going to be, I think, quite another important piece of legislation because it is, you know, it actually impacts on a lot of the work we've done already, companies, co-ops, and of course the procurement itself. All right. Next thing is that Ms. Zita Blanche, the chairperson of the FCT, Ms. Hazel DeVrage, Registrar, Acting Head Corporate Support, Ms. Maralisa Bosch, Head of Legal Support, Ms. Babs Kuljeet, is it? Or Kuljeet? Mr. And I'm sure then it's not Babs. What is it? Oh, that's the full name, yeah, okay. Director Institutional Management, Ms. Poppy Quenyamo. Director Public Entity Oversight, and Mr. Mark Tabella, Acting Group Corporate, is the Chief Operating Officer. Are you here in the place of Ms. DDG Jody Schultz? Thank you. Yes, we certainly would like to indicate to the committee, many of us are familiar with Ms. Jody Schultz. She's just added to our population growth recently and had a little baby boy, who I think, judging from what I've heard, seemed to be anxious to join the debating chamber. So we do wish her well. But anyway, so it's, I think you do have our brief. And just to remind the committee what that brief is, which goes back to May or earlier than that, June, is with respect to the Commission, the National Consumer Commission, the committee are concerned with service delivery, and in that respect, of course, the mandate relates to the rulings that are required to be made when necessary by the NCC, and what we need to look at is how many of those rulings that have been made have actually gone to the National Consumer Tribunal, and of those, how many have been continued to be recognized, if you like, and how many may have had to be turned aside or set aside, I think would be a better way of putting it. And if you can provide a short reason and not simply to say 20 set aside and that's the end of the matter, because the committee would want to engage on that. So over to yourself then, thank you.
Good morning, Honourable Chairperson and Honourable Members of the Committee, our colleagues from the DTI, guests. It's an honour and a pleasure for us to be here today. I must say, even though in as much as it's an honour and a pleasure, it also makes us as an organisation quite nervous to come and account to the people who provide oversight to us. So if my voice wobbles at some point, please, that is the reason for that. I'm quite mindful of the brief that we received from the Portfolio Committee in this for this specific presentation, but we have taken the liberty to also amplify it to some extent, and we have given you an amplified presentation as well. And it was important for us to do an amplified presentation to some extent just to sketch out the context within which we operate and how we relate to the regulators, like the National Consumer Commission and the National Credit Regulator. And also, of course, you will have seen quite a bit of press coverage on the matters from the Consumer Commission that came to the tribunal, and we thought it is important that you also understand the context around those. But then, of course, we wanted to talk also a bit about the legal principles that underpins our decisions and how that basically then bears out in our final decisions. We also wanted to point to the integrity of our decision-making, the issues around reviews and appeal and how that happens, and the outcomes of the cases that we've been taken on review of appeal to date. And then there are certain general matters that we thought we would also like to point out. In terms of conceptualizing, the role of the Consumer Tribunal is to really contribute to providing access to redress to consumers. How do we do that? We do that through findings of prohibited conduct in terms of the National Credit Act and the Consumer Protection Act. What that means and how we provide that contribution is once we have made a finding of prohibited conduct, at that point a consumer can take that certificate that gets issued by myself as chairperson, take it to the High Court and claim for damages in the High Court. That is how we contribute to that. The second thing is there are inevitably disputes between the regulators and the regulated entities in connection to the regulators' decisions that are made about those regulated entities. So our role is then to resolve those disputes through a decision we then make at the National Consumer Tribunal. And of course the decisions we make are then subject to review or appeal to the High Court. It can go to the Supreme Court of Appeal and it can go to the Constitutional Court. How do we fulfill that role? We do it through adjudications. We adjudicate on applications that come before us, and we adjudicate on referrals that are made to us in terms of both these pieces of legislation. Now, the section 142 of the National Credit Act which was amended to give us an extended mandate in terms of Consumer Protection Act, lays out as how we must fulfill that role. And it says to us, we must conduct our hearings in public, and I want to just draw a distinction here between what we call a hearing and an adjudication. A hearing is when there's a dispute between the parties. Where there's no dispute between the parties, we do what we call adjudicate. That we can do in chambers. And those types of matters can generally be heard by one tribunal member. Generally speaking, hearings, disputes must be heard in public. We must do it in an inquisitorial manner. Inquisitorial means we're not tied to what the parties put in front of us. We must apply the law. We must apply the constitution. We must apply any other laws that might be applicable to the case before us. And even if the parties don't raise it, we can take notice of that and we must make a determination on that. And then, of course, it must be as informal as possible. So we're not necessarily going to look at technical things and uphold it just because somebody raises it. It must go to the heart of whether that technicality is so important that even at a higher level, we can get overturned if we don't take into account that specific technicality that is raised. And we are, of course, also obliged to apply the principles of natural justice. And that, of course, links back to the South African Constitution, and it links back to the Public Administration of Justice Act. We at the tribunal are very much alive to the fact that we are subject to review and appeal by the higher courts. And we are no strangers to being taken on review or appeal. So when we adjudicate on our cases and when we hear cases before the tribunal, we are very careful to be sure that whatever decision we take at the tribunal, we have a very good chance that we may not be overturned on appeal. Of course, people do get overturned all the time by the higher courts. So how do we then adjudicate? We conduct hearings, we confirm content orders. Within the context of the National Credit Act, we look at debt rearrangement agreements. We review compliance notices. And it's within the area of compliance notices when really we had our main interaction with the National Consumer Commission. Because what happens is that a host of compliance notices have been issued against various economic participants, and they were not happy about these compliance notices have been issued to us, so they brought it to us to review. We look at deregistrations of registrants, we look at the imposition of administrative fines, issues orders for interim relief, issues soft orders, and so on, but in limited circumstances. I'm sorry, I'm still speaking to the amplified presentation. I wanted to just focus quite briefly and quickly on the regulatory actions. What are those regulatory actions that regulators can take that will ultimately come to us? They can take, of course, enforcement action. They can issue those compliance notices. They can decide when a complaint comes to them, they will not refer it because they see no merit in the complaint before them. Or they can refer it to us so that we can make a determination on previous conduct and we can look at settlements and consent orders. And each of these, of course, have a very real implication for the consumer. And we have in the presentation put out the workflows, for example, on all these different types of decision a regulator can take. I'm not going to take you through that workflow. I'll just sketch it in very broad terms. And please accept our apology. It's very dense. It is difficult to retain the legal meaning of the sections when we try and reduce it too much. So just to go back then to the previous slide where we talk now about that. What is the implications of the decisions taken by regulators? When a regulator decides to issue a compliance notice, a consumer can never get any form of redress arising out of the issuance of a compliance notice. What the compliance notice does is it says to the economic participant, you have transgressed the legislation and we want you to correct your action.
If you don't correct your action, the consequence of that is that we may come to the tribunal, ask the tribunal to impose an administrative penalty, and that administrative penalty gets paid to the national fiscus. So there is no redress for consumers in the issuance of a compliance notice. So it's really to say, we want to make sure that you comply with law and regulation, and if you don't, it will be at the pace of an administrative penalty that will be paid to the fiscus. Then what is the second option a regulator can take? The second option a regulator can take is to say, we are going to enter into a settlement agreement with you. You may or may not agree that you contravene the legislation, but in any event, you undertake that you will correct your behavior, and with it may be or may not be compensation to consumers, because that's a voluntary process. That is what I see sort of as the midpoint to getting to redress for consumers. Then there is the ultimate redress that the consumer can then access is through, for example, the referrals of prohibited conduct, where we can then make a finding, yes, there was a contravention of the Act, this is what the contravention is, we make a determination, that determination is captured in a certificate, the consumer comes, gets the certificate from the tribunal, goes to the High Court and claims damages in the High Court. And then, of course, for the criminal contravention of the legislation, there are prosecutions that may go to the National Prosecuting Authority. Issues like fraud and corruption, etc., etc., would be typically what one would be looking at. So, then you will see I've spoken a bit about the workflow, and I've merely done that as background reading, or when you feel interested in seeing the detail around what I just laid out, this is really what is captured in these following few slides. Now, there's also the issue of interim relief. Interim relief in the High Court really speaks to urgent interdicts. Now, you can only get to interim relief through a referral of prohibited conduct in terms of the legislation. If the Commission or the, in the Consumer Protection Act context decide to issue a compliance notice, it closes the door to a consumer for any other action in terms of prohibited conduct, getting damages, getting urgent relief, it closes that door. And we have made that finding in some of our cases, more specifically in Nayara Distribution and Early Works 266, which is the case that you see in front of you on the screen right now. I thought it is helpful to point it out because people come to the tribunal, they come with a claim for interim relief where the Commission has issued a compliance notice and our hands are tied. We can't help that consumer. Because if we make a decision to grant the interim relief, it means we can overturn on appeal or on review. And certainly we wouldn't want to take a decision that we definitely know legally is challengeable and is not within our powers as a tribunal to make decisions that are sanctioned by our law. So this is basically why I thought it is useful to talk around the interim relief issues. So if you can just move it on. Now, against the background of that, I thought I would then give you now an idea of our case statistics, of the types of cases that came before us. Those are the detailed numbers on the next slide. You will see the specific numbers in terms of our caseload. And if I saw those better, you will see how our caseload has increased from 2009 and 2012. Currently, we see, I allocate cases to tribunal members at a pace of about close to 60 cases twice a week. 120 cases, I allocate to tribunal members who are all part-time members, two times a week at any given point in time. Tribunal members have on average between 40 and 60 cases per person at any given point in time. So you see the caseloads have shot up tremendously. What we have done, because we've also always said as an organization, We don't want to continue going to our sponsor, the DTI, and continue to ask for more money, more resources, more this, that, and the other. So we've tried to be quite adaptable about our resources and how we use it. So what we have done, for example, is now equipping tribunal members with IT means to be able to even sit at their homes. They have the cases and they can do it whenever they have the time to do it. It saves us travel costs, it saves us accommodation costs, it saves us taxes, rental costs, battalions, etc., etc., etc. And we've been able to, as a result, increase the input-output of tribunal members from one case every 3 days to 12 cases every 3 days. At our August workshop with tribunal members, we are hoping to persuade tribunal members to look at perhaps 20 cases every 3 days. But this, of course, will have to go hand in hand with us really looking how we can increase efficiency, utilize IT interventions, and so on. Then in terms of our caseload, you've seen a lot of our cases relate to consent order applications. These are consent order applications in terms of the National Credit Act. You will have seen in our annual report we talk about debt rearrangement agreements. And it is those debt rearrangement agreements that we really have a high volume of on an ongoing basis. And our approach has been, as a tribunal, we are very careful about it because with debt rearrangement agreements, you can find that people agree to illegal terms in those debt rearrangement agreements. So our approach has been, even if the consumer agreed with the credit provider, this is the interest rate they will pay, the period they will pay, is if we see that you have a 70-year-old person agreeing to debt for 50 years, we don't know of somebody who can live 220 years, so we will not grant that type of debt rearrangement. If we see that the person has a low amount to pay for the debt in terms of the debt rearrangement, we are going to agree with it. If we can see that there's no provision made for a person's food, there's no provision for accommodation, there's no provision for X, Y, and Z. So we are very, very conscious and very careful about those things. And what we have made very well known through our decisions is that the tribunal will not rubber stamp an agreement entered into between the parties because they've agreed to do so. From the point of view that as tribunal, our role and our responsibility is to know the law that we have to apply, and we also have to work on the assumption that maybe others don't understand that law that well. That is our responsibility. Then, what's in terms of the Credit Act, we have then, beyond the consent orders, 11 types of applications that came to us from the National Credit Act. One only of those has been referred to us by the regulator, and that's in relation to deregistration of entities that are required to be registered in terms of the National Credit Act. If I may remind you, those registrants are credit providers, debt counselors, and credit bureaus. And the deregistrations we have seen on the main relates to the deregistration of debt counselors. We've had one consent order application moved by the regulator for deregistration of a small credit provider in Limpopo province earlier this year, where the credit provider agreed to pay a 20,000 rand administrative penalty. So 10 out of 11 applications in terms of the National Credit Act comes to us from what we term private parties as opposed to the regulators. And but most concerning is that you see there's zero prohibited conduct referrals. In terms of the National Credit Act, there are approximately 49 instances of prohibited conduct in the NCA, the National Credit Act. Those 49, amongst others, relate to excessive charges of interest rates. And there are a host of others. That is of concern to us. I've just now gone up and laid out there the detail of the actual applications and what they actually involve. If we go on to the next slide, I spoke to debt rearrangement agreements. You will see that what we dealt with is in excess of 7,000 consumer credit agreements, with a combined value of more than 200 million rand. We do not believe that we have seen the majority of these debt rearrangement agreements. Not if we look at the number of debt counselors that are registered with the National Credit Regulator. We certainly, I believe, probably see 1 or 2% of them. In terms of the Consumer Protection Act, today we've received two types of consumer protection letters. The one is reduce of compliance notices in terms of Section 101 of the Consumer Protection Act, and then we've seen applications for interim relief in terms of Section 114 of the Consumer Protection Act. Now, those applications for interim relief, we are constrained, as I've indicated. Once there's a compliance notice, you cannot grant interim relief as an adjudicator. Then, I also wanted to point out that in terms of the Consumer Protection Act, there's approximately 99 instances of prohibited conduct. To date, we've not received any referrals of prohibited conduct from the regulator. And then, of course, there are all the legal issues in the Consumer Protection Act matters, and they are really, really very complex. And the records filed by the parties are voluminous. For example, we have just finalized the Auction Alliance matter. Three tribunal members, all part-time members, and we had about 8 arch-level files to work through for the matter. And it is not unusual. Also in the National Credit Act, in a typical deregistration application, we in one case I think had about 17 arch-level files that we had to work through for one case. That takes a lot of planning and thinking, how do you deal with a volume. So what we typically do is we will park the 17 files on a desk, the three tribunal members will sit together in a room and we will basically divvy them up and work through them and they share the knowledge that we gained out of those files. But it is a very intense, very time consuming and a very, very paper intensive process that we have to embark on, because the parties can raise any issue out of any of those papers and we have to know what is happening in those matters. So when we then adjudicate on cases, and this is where we've really been subject to challenge, is we have to consider two broad aspects in our cases. We have to ask ourselves, are there jurisdictional issues that we need to consider? Then we must ask ourselves, is the substantive issues meriting the decision that was arrived at by whether it's a complainant or the regulators? Now, in the jurisdictional issues, of course, procedural requirements. The biggest issue for us is natural justice. As our Act tells us to do, we must take due regard for the principles of natural justice, the Constitution, the respect for the dignity of the parties, and so on. So the issues around procedural requirements are really key, and how the parties have also been going through the process, what was involved in the process, and so on. And then there are certain jurisdictional facts and prerequisites that have to be in place before we can hear matter. For example, let me give you one example. For a regulator to come to a view that they must issue a compliance notice, they must first form a reasonable belief that the party was involved in prohibited conduct. How do you get to a reasonable belief? You have to get to it through an investigation. The Consumer Protection Act is very clear. The Consumer Protection Act says, you, Commission, has the discretion to do these different things. Issue a compliance notice, get into a consent order, refer matter for prosecution, refer to the National Prosecuting Authority after concluding an investigation. We don't have a choice how we interpret law. Law has to be interpreted in the ordinary plain meaning. It cannot be plainer than that. that to issue a compliance notice, there has to be an investigation. So we have to ask ourselves, was there an investigation? Was the investigation in terms of the Constitution? Was all the parties, were their point of view heard, etc., etc.? And then, of course, there are also technical requirements, and let me go to compliance notices around form and content. So in terms of form, they have to contain certain information. In both the Consumer Protection Act and the National Credit Act, it has to contain what is the prohibited conduct. Why do you come to, what is the basis, what is our conduct that you say that's prohibited if you match it against the legislation? Then you must say then, what are the steps I require of you as a regulated entity to correct that behavior? And then of course you can and you have to state that if you don't correct the behavior, you may have an administrative penalty imposed on you by the tribunal. So those are the types of issues that as a matter of course we have to consider within all of these issues. So what is the approach that we have taken as tribunal? Now mindful of the fact that we don't have unlimited resources. We have to ask ourselves practically and from a cost-effective point of view, how do we now tackle these cases that can potentially run into 3, 4, 5 days at a time? So we say to ourselves and we say to the parties, first, if anybody has jurisdictional issues to raise, or if the tribunal out of its own accord has jurisdictional issues to raise, let's deal with those issues before the time, at the outset of the hearing. Why? Because it's unnecessary for us to look at the merits if the process is not in order. It also avoids a lengthy hearing that is not necessary. And often those jurisdictional issues we can't have dealt with issues around procedural fairness. And those are principles that are well established in our law, in our high courts and in our constitutional court. And what we have also taken to do, taking now our mandate to be expeditious, we do not want parties to come to the tribunal on the date of the hearing and we raise a question with them. Then they say to us, oh, you've caught us by surprise. We're not ready to deal with the issue. So what we do as a matter of course is we write a letter to all the parties and we say, we have identified X, Y, and Z matter in this case. Please come ready to the hearing to address us on these issues. We do not want people to come to the hearing. The senior counsel, the junior counsel, the attorney, the candidate attorney, and they say to us, oops, now we can't proceed because we didn't know or didn't think that you might want us to address this issue. It's also to avoid parties having to incur unnecessary costs in coming to a hearing and really not be able to address the issues that are pertinent for us in our decision making. And in that way, we basically issue these directives. Now, the next few slides just talks really about the exercising of public power, that both the NCT, the NCC, the NCR, we are all public entities. We have to comply with the Constitution. We have to comply with the doctrine of legality, which is part of the rule of law. And the rule of law tells us you must act within your powers, and your decisions and your actions should be authorized by law. And as public bodies, we must function within the constraints of law. And as a side note, when we do that, we should also treat the parties who come before us with dignity. And the next two slides, you will basically see, we have now just gone and raised the main cases in our high courts, in the constitutional courts, that now deal with the applicable legal principles and the approaches to litigation. In terms of compliance notices, I just brought out the types of findings that we regrettably had to make on those compliance notices. City of Johannesburg, highly publicized, we found that the investigation was not conducted. Basically, a complaint was lodged, the complaint was accepted, and on the basis of the complaint, the compliance notice was issued. And we go into a bit of detail there. We looked at the issue of consultation with regulated entities, with the regulatory authorities, and it's a setup within the Consumer Protection Act that Parliament in its wisdom thought is important and it must be there. It's recognition for other regulatory authorities. Because there's no use in duplicating things and having things done across regulators relating to that regulated entity. So the concept of consultation is very key when compliance notices are issued. And it's on that aspect that we found in the Vodacom matter that the compliance notice was falling short of the measure. Similarly, in multi-choice, a similar issue, also around consultation. So it really just speak now more about the compliance notices and the provisions around that. If you can go on, Hazel. Yeah, then we speak a bit about PAJA. We have to look at PAJA. Of course, there's we do hear consistently that action by the Commission is not administrative action. We disagree with that. We have been told that we'll be taken on review or appeal. We've been told that through the best mainly. No appeal or review has been forthcoming on any of the tribunal's decisions. Those appeals and reviews, if they are going to be brought, will be out of time. It will require condemnation applications to the High Court. Let me see. So that is, now I want to come now to the cases now we've adjudicated. To date, there's 38, we talk about the current year. Over the years, we have in excess of 90 decisions that we have reached. In terms of that, we have only been taken on a review or appeal on 4 matters to date. We've been overturned on 1 matter, South African Fraud Prevention Services. It was on our interpretation of what a credit bureau is based on the facts before us. The High Court disagreed with us, and the High Court said that we made an error in law in terms of how we interpreted what constitutes a credit bureau and how we categorize this entity. Because we said they're not a credit bureau and therefore not required to be registered, the High Court said, no, we don't agree with the interpretation. We believe they're a credit bureau and we require them to be registered with a credit regulator within 7 days. Then other applications where we've also been taken on appeal was around Bornman and others, debt counselor, where we made an order that they have to repay consumers monies that was overcharged. They took us on appeal saying that we had no right to make that decision. We were upheld in the appeal court. The next matter was Ferreira. I must ask my colleague. I'm sorry, I can't remember all of that. It was also dismissed. I'm just trying to remember. There are so many that like, get tumbled up on my head. Sorry, it was a deregistration. A deregistration. Where we ordered the deregistration of this specific registrant. It took us to the High Court. It was also dismissed. The next matter is Barco Financial Services. We also issued a decision that a consumer was asked illegally a service fee. And we said that they should refund the consumer's service fee, and that matter is scheduled for a hearing on 20 March 2013. In terms of other matters where we've been taken on review or appeal, there are no others. We've been told we'll be taken on review or appeal. That didn't eventuate. We'll be ready to assist the court should it ever happen. Our approach around that Jefferson is to say, look, as a tribunal, we don't operate in isolation. People have right to take our decisions on a review or appeal. In fact, we welcome it because that means people understand their rights within the legal context. And what it does, when they do that, it gives us more certainty around the interpretation and application of this legislation. And for us, it is actually then also a learning experience. What is it that we could have overlooked? What is it that we could have misinterpreted? And it is very helpful to us as an organization and as a learning institution. So what we have also done, just on a general note, Chairperson, honorable members, is we have said we must increase our accessibility because we only have offices in Centurion. So we hold our hearings across the country. We enter into arrangements with other consumer protection offices in the provinces, and with their cooperation, we can host hearings in their offices, and in that way also build the awareness of the consumer protection officer in the provinces so that we increase accessibility to consumers across the country. What we've also done is we've made our application guidelines available in 11 languages. We do set precedents. As we have indicated, very few, one only of our decisions has been overturned. Our decisions are available on an international database called SATLI, which is managed by the Constitutional Court Trust, and that is just a screenshot of how the cases appear on the international database. On the closing note, Chairperson, of course, we are currently experiencing a very unique situation as an adjudicator and as a tribunal. I think we are probably the first and only adjudicator and tribunal who has been taken to the High Court for an urgent application by another public entity and regulator. We are in court on the 31st by the National Consumer Commission. We are in court on an urgent application on 31 July. It's in connection with the order we issued in the auction lines matter, where we didn't issue the reasons with the order due to the urgency of finalizing our decision. And it's not unusual for courts or tribunals to issue orders and follow the reasons later, and we now find ourselves in the High Court. Of course, in terms of constitution, there is a remedy if there's any conflicts between public entities, which is that there should be other measures of redress sought before you resort to the courts. So with that, Chairperson, I'll contact details, and I really am very pleased to be here today and report, and we are always, always very receptive and very interested to hear from the honorable members and from any external stakeholders how they think we can improve our service offering, what we believe is a service offering to the public, and with that we thank you.
Thank you very much indeed, Mr. Blunch. Is that correct then? Yes. There was just the one slide, I can't read it, so I don't know quite what it is. It's in blue. It's called adjudication.
That is a SATLI screenshot of our cases that appear on this international database, Jefferson.
Because I can't read this, Julian. Does it indicate, well, like, these are cases you've held and whether they were accepted, returned, or whatever?
It would indicate that. If it is overturned, that would indicate that it was overturned. Well, that's another point, or upheld or not.
Okay, so that's what's there, because I just can't read it.
Yes.
Okay, thank you very much. And thank you for, really, for me, this is my first experience of getting a better understanding of what the National Consumer Tribunal is doing, and what appears to be a creative approach to operating given the constraints on your budget. But having said that, if I could just turn to the members, Honourable McIntosh, Honourable Van der Merwe, Honourable Mabasa.
Madam Chair, I must congratulate Mr.